Good day to all the listeners, and thank you for tuning into this episode of the story of Emma Rose. And Emma Rose is actually a newborn child. So the question that some may have in their mind is, what kind of story would a newborn have? But that's not really the story now, is it? It's everything before, during, and after her birth that is the actual story. Very interesting story, by the way, and something I think that just needed to be told, because things that happen were just not normal things. They were just nothing that people would expect to happen, nothing that people would ever even think could have happened. So I guess this first series, or this part of the series, is just an introduction for you to understand exactly what happened, why we're actually putting this podcast out, and how it affected the entire family and what's going on with Emma Rose. So just a quick overview of what's going to happen now. And after hearing this podcast, I think you're going to decide if you want to listen to the rest of it, or you might just say, yeah, that's not for me. And that's quite fine. And this is the reason for showing the long and short of what's the matter with Emma Rose, or the story of Emma Rose in per se. So technically, my name is Rashad Penn. I am the father of Emma Rose. She is my second child. She is my second daughter to myself and my wife, Crystal Penn. And she was born on October 9th, 2020. Now, that's not a big deal because, you know, a lot of people are born on that day. People are born there all the time. So it's not a big deal. But what happened on that day and everything happening after that completely flipped my entire world upside down and actually turned our family inside out, but at the same time wanting us to be more closer. So what actually happened is, shortly after Emma was born, she was having problems breathing. So the doctors had to figure out exactly, okay, well, what's going on here? They took her away. And just to let you know, because this is during COVID, this actually makes things even more difficult dealing with things, because, you know, especially at PMH, they were not allowing parents, or I wouldn't say parents, wouldn't allow fathers there or even family members at the hospital. So my wife is there and she's there all alone and having to deal with most of this by her own self. So what happened was, when she was born, they took her away and they realized that the baby was not breathing properly and that something might be wrong. Anyway, they found out that she had a heart defect. Some people pronounce it wrongly. I would say pronounce it. People say it wrongly, say it's a disease. It's not a disease. This is actually a defect. It is actually known as transposition of the great arteries. And that's a big technical term, just to say that the arteries are not in the right place. That's all. They're in the wrong place. That's what's happening with the heart. So what happens with this defect, with a normal heart, and we have to talk about the circulatory system, because this one is actually infected in her entire body. The whole thing was actually affected in her body, was that with a normal heart, the heart would pump deoxygenated blood. So blood that comes from the body goes to the heart, and then from the heart, it goes to the lungs. And then from the lungs, it picks up oxygen, brings it back to the heart. Then from the heart, it goes to the body. So body, heart, lungs, heart. So it's like that. And this is how oxygen gets about your body. This is how your organs and your muscles and everything else gets oxygen. This is how we move. This is how we run. This is how we do everything that we do. How we're able to think fast enough because our brain gets oxygen. All these things happening. And so because of the circulatory system and the way our heart operates, this is how we can operate. In Emma's case, this did not happen. Transposition means that they're transposed. In other words, the great arteries are not where they're supposed to be. The artery that takes the blood from the heart to the lungs kind of switch, because now what happens is, it goes from the heart to the lungs, from the lungs to the heart, and where it should go to the body, it goes back to the lungs. So it's heart, lungs, heart, lungs, heart, lungs. On the other side of the heart, it goes to the body, and the blood comes back to the heart. And when it should go back to the heart to pick up oxygen, it just goes back to the body. So body, heart, body, heart. So she has two circulations of the blood, one deoxygenated, one oxygenated, and not mixing. And if you understand what I said just now, that's just not sustainable, okay? So that's a problem. This is why before doctors even knew what this was, babies were dying because of this, you know? Because their body, their brain, their organs were not getting enough oxygen. And because we didn't know what it was, they call them blue babies at the time. Because when you look at Caucasian babies, when they're born, they're not getting oxygen. So because it's deoxygenated blood, it goes through their body and just keep on sapping away the little bit of oxygen that's in their blood. And sooner or later, they die. So this was the problem with Emma. She was born with this heart defect. Now, thanks to modern technology and advances in medicine, doctors are able to fix this. Unfortunately for us, not in the Bahamas. Now, we have some great heart doctors in the Bahamas, but I don't think we have the medical facilities to do this. I'm not too sure exactly what it was, but this surgery that she needed to switch the arteries back to where they should be is not something that doctors in the Bahamas do. So, obviously, okay, we got to go to the States to get this heart surgery. Now, you're not even thinking about, okay, what is this going to cost? What is it going to do? All you knew is that your child needs your help. So what do I need to do? Okay, just tell me and we're going to figure this out. Anyway, what happened, now that we know what the problem was, now we know what the solution was, but this is where things got interesting. The night before she was supposed to be flying, because we were putting things together, trying to make sure that, you know, we can get an air ambulance out. This was during the lockdown, so we need to get permission to move about. We had to do all these things just to get Emma to where she could travel, having to get some kind of passport for her or some kind of document to say that she's a Bahamian citizen because the United States were not going to allow her inside of it. It was so many different little things that were going on. I'd be trying to get it done. And then I get a call and they said, you need you to come in. It's like, come in for what? No, why don't you tell me over the phone? Because I know when you're calling me in, something happened. And I was not ready to hear the bad news. I just wasn't ready to hear it. So the doctor told me, say, okay, you know, everything's fine with the baby. But during the night, she suffered a cardiac arrest. Now, when you have a cardiac arrest, you're always thinking about older people. You know, they have a heart attack. They had a cardiac arrest. That's like a medical term. Their heart stopped. That's pretty much exactly what happened. Her heart stopped. And they didn't know why. So for some unknown amount of time, her body had no oxygen because they had her on like an oxygen tank or something like that, trying to get oxygen to her body. But if her heart stopped, that means her lungs are going to stop. That means that a lot of other things in her body are going to stop, which means that there's no blood flow. Even if she's inside an oxygenated chamber, it didn't even matter. So for some time, she was without oxygen. This can lead to complications, which it did. And I'll talk about that later, because now internal organs are affected. Muscle development is affected and the brain is affected. So the question now is, okay, well, what do we have to do? I mean, you know, of course, after you deal with that, because that's not good news to take. And how do you even take that? Like, yeah, okay, fine, no problem. No, it's a tough thing to understand that the child that you've been waiting for these 9, usually feels like 12 months, you know, you've just been waiting for this baby and now she's here and you can't even see her because she now has this issue. So anyway, just to get it long and short, because I'm going to talk about this in different series, we now had to get her to the United States, which is a whole process of trying to deal with government agencies and calling this person and calling that one, calling in favors for here, talking to people, you know, and trying to get things proper, straight, so that we can leave the country and take the baby out of the country. The whole medical team coming here. The transportation, oh my gosh, that was the most stressful day of my life so far. I have to say so far, because who knows? I thought that I would never see much stress, but that was horrible. So we got her to the United States and some things happened there that was very difficult. I had no idea where I was going to stay. I didn't know where I was going. Nothing. All I knew was I needed to get to Miami because my baby's going to Miami. And the reason why people think, well, you know, don't you just go on the air ambulance? That's a part of the problem. I could not get on the air ambulance flight. Oh boy, I tell you, this was a stressful day. Anyway, so you're in Miami. Some things happen. I'll talk about that later on. I'm in the hospital and now I'm there. Emma's there. She's okay. They're taking care of her, but I have no place to stay. I was ready to actually sleep in the hospital, but again, during the COVID, you couldn't go in certain places. They wasn't allowing parents to stay in the hospital. So it was like, technically, you're getting kicked out after a certain time. So I was looking at sleeping on the street, just to somewhere nearby. I was going to find a pump or whatever, take a shower in the morning, or find a bathroom in one of the food places, whatever I had to do, just to stay close to that hospital to find what's going to happen to my daughter. And then from there, I had to call on people because we have no family in Miami, very few friends in Miami. It was such a fact that I had to call on friends back home who stepped in a huge, humongous way. I mean, the timing of things that were happening along the way is just amazing. This story is going to freak you guys out because it's still freaking me out. You know, things that happen. People want to call it a miracle. Call it what you want to call it. All I know is, dude, look here. If there is such a thing as perfect timing, this entire process showed me that, which means that this was had to be guided by some outside force. That's the only way. That's the only way I could describe it. And then we're looking at the issues that arose from her cardiac arrest, because now we're looking at liver damage, kidneys, not just the kidney, sorry, the intestine damage and the overall brain damage. I mean, the doctors were so intense with this. Imagine walking into a room and you have like about 8 to 10 different people in one room over your child, and they're all talking to you in all this medical term, this and that, and you're still thinking about, I hear what you're saying, but right now I don't even know where I'm going to stay tonight because you're talking about doing something tomorrow. I don't know where I'm going to be tomorrow. You know, so it was so much pressure that was coming on me on this one day of what's going on. And then you're signing off on this and you're talking about this and that. Even though you're hearing it, you know, there's a part of your brain and how I dealt with it. I had to become a robot. I had to become callous. And not to say that in a bad way, it's because so much was happening so fast because of the dire state of which she was in. She was in a very critical state. I mean, to the point of doctors were looking at me like, if we don't do this, your baby's going to die. It was like that. It was as simple as that. And that happens about 3 times. If we don't do this, your baby's going to die. Not saying those words per se, but the importance of what needed to be done and the state that she was in, it was that dire. So this is the whole story of Emma. And then coming to that point where after so much help, I mean, amazing help from friends back home who made calls on my behalf, and their family took me in and helped me with this and helped me with that and offered this, and all persons I didn't even ask for help, and they still reached out before I could ask. I mean, I guess over time, having people that you can call friends, that's one thing that I really learned, like having really good friends, people who I know if it happened to them, I wouldn't waste time either. I was like, well, what do you need? You know? And I think to me, that is the most important thing, or most, what's the word I want to use for that? I guess I could say it was the most important thing to me. It was the most amazing that happened, because I'm not one to ask for help as much unless I really, really need it. And I really, really needed it, you know, but people stepped up before that time. And then, why I'm saying this is because this story is still ongoing. There are so many times, and it's still an up and down roller coaster where we don't know what's going to happen to your daughter. She might have been on dialysis for the rest of her life. She may need to live with a tube on the outside of her body. She may have to urinate through a bag. She may have to be on oxygen for the rest of her life. Her motor skills may never come back, and she will be confined to a wheelchair with oxygen. We don't even know if she will be able to respond. She may be a vegetable. She may be able to only move her eye. It's like so much things that the doctors were saying. They were always giving, okay, it could be where she's a baby, she could bounce back, but worst case scenario is your daughter's not going to walk, she's not going to talk, she's not going to recognize your face, she's not going to do certain things, she's not. So all of this is happening through this entire process, and I'm not going to give away the whole story. But that is why the story of Emma is such an amazing story to be told, because you're going to be amazed by what actually happened and how people stepped forward and helped out. And we haven't even reached out to the public to say that, hey, we needed help on anything. It was so devastating to me that when we were, how should I say, when we were first looking into having the doctors look into, okay, then where are we going to, which hospital in the United States are going to accept this case? And the doctors in Nassau were making calls and sending emails. Once they heard cardiac arrest, it seems as if they didn't want to take the case. In fact, the one who first did, they gave us a bill of close to $400,000. I'm like, wow, that's a lot of cookouts. That's a lot of GoFundMe. You know, we were trying to figure out, okay, what can cover this? How can we deal with this? But you know what? No matter what it is, we have to find some way to get this done. What amount of time would we need? And whilst we're trying to figure this out to get this flight to come in, which was expensive for the air ambulance, and then figuring out how we're going to pay the hospital for this surgery, that's when we got the call about the cardiac arrest. So that just multiplied things. And we're trying to figure out, well, oh my gosh, who's going to accept it now, because it was so difficult. But again, I'm going to talk about the doctors who were involved and the calls that were made and the foundations that were called and the blessings I can all say. It's the only word I can use. The blessings that came this way from knowing people, or people just feeling sympathetic to our plight and just helping out without us even asking, just knowing what to do. This is the main crux of the story. So fast forward now, and we're here in Miami, and we're just working with so many different doctors who are telling us yes and no, and we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Here's the problem. This isn't the problem. We're taking this test and that test, and we need to find out this. So this is a problem. That is a problem. And it's so much back and forth, up and down, that this, when I tell my family, they... Even I feel like they were more stressed than I was. I was in it. But I guess from hearing how many things were happening in one day, and this have been weeks now, just so many things that they themselves were feeling the pressure, you know, like, oh man, dude, how are you handling this? What's going on? You need some help with this, need some help with that. But it was just so much. And then my wife, she couldn't travel because she just had a C-section. So I was doing this by myself. Like I said, there was no one here. There was no one I could turn to. She did not get cleared to travel because, you know, she just had stitches from the C-section and couldn't move about, had to heal up. And she was back and forth with her doctor and trying to get that done. So I was here to buckle down. And then for other persons to travel this way, again, there was social distancing here in Miami, which is known as a hot spot. Because for me to get certain things, I had to quarantine. So even if family or friends came, there's nothing much you could have done because we still had to be separated. So it was just, it was a very emotional ride. It was a very intense ride. It was one where my entire family got separated. It was a point where all of us were in different homes. My wife was in one place. My newborn baby was another place. I was in another place. And my other baby was in another place. So we as a family was completely separated from each other. That was difficult to deal with. And so now we became a virtual family, talking to each other via the phone, just calling each other up, talking and looking at a screen, when we're such a close, we're a very private family, but we're a close family. We're always, when we're home, we're sitting together and laughing and playing around, but now we're all separated. So that was tough alone. That was very, very tough for me emotionally, you know, being separated from my immediate family in that point, and then from my extended family, or what we still call immediate, like my mother, my sisters and my cousins and aunts and uncles, who I'm so used, because my family is also so close and we can't talk and can't see them. So everything is, again, virtual. And how do you express how you're feeling when you yourself are trying to be callous? Because if you let it out, like, who's going to console you? It was just, it was a really tough time, man. It's really, really tough. And I'm, again, being a private person, talking about this is really tough, but I know I have to talk about it because I don't know who else may have to go through this. And I've learned a lot of things along the way in a short period of time, but I've learned a lot of things. And one thing I do know, it's always good to be good to people. You know, you just never know where it comes back, and not just good because you looking for something from them. It's just be good because be a good person, you know, and people help you out when you definitely need it. That's the biggest takeaway I've had so far from this. Beyond that, I mean, I'm not going to give it away. So just stay tuned. I just stay tuned to the overall story. In fact, I want to talk a little bit more about a few things that happened even with when my wife finally came over. And it's something I've noticed even with my first daughter, that daddies don't matter, you know? And I felt like I was thrown to the side, not by my wife, but by everyone else, because every time they see both of us together, they would automatically turn to her and talk to her. And if she didn't say, well, my husband was here, and explain to them that I was here for the first 2.5 weeks dealing with all the pressure, you know, even then, when you explain it, they still look at me, but they're so used to talking to mothers in these situations that when the father shows up and is always there, I was to the hospital every morning before 9 a.m. religiously. Not even security just used to have myself waiting because she's like, you, Mr. Penn, I know you're going to come. You just knew me that well. I'm there every day. And I'm talking about leaving when the sun is setting because, you know, I'm in a place I'm not familiar with and I'm walking. I have no transportation. Or sometimes I have to catch a taxi or whatever the situation may be. But I was there every morning living on 4 to 5 hours sleep. That's what was happening. So this story of Emma is a very interesting story. I've broken it up into different sections and I'm going to post those sections. You can look within the blog itself right underneath where this is being played on broadupc.com and you'll see the sections I'm going to be talking about. And of course, this is not ended because this is actually ongoing. So it's just a matter of bringing you up to speed as to what happened while I was here. And then my wife, she's going to come on and give you her point of view from this whole thing that was happening. And we're going to put those together. And this will make the story of Emma. And I hope that this is going to bless someone, that someone is going to actually take this information and get something from this and realize what's going to happen, because it's going to get deep. It's going to get deep personally, spiritually, physically, mentally. This went deep, people. Okay. And I'm trying my best not to let any cats out the bag, because each section is going to go very deep. This is going to test your beliefs. This is going to test what you think was normal, what you think is friendship, what you think is religion or spirituality, which is going to test a lot of that from what we have seen and what has actually happened. Because we have a different perspective on exactly what happened and why things happened. And even trying to understand why did this whole thing go on? I mean, we have an answer for that as well. All right. So just stand by right here on broadupc.com. We're going to be posting it on the website. You're going to see updates come to the actual Instagram page. So go there. You're going to see snippets. And we're going to try to share this as much as we could on my personal page and anywhere else that someone need to hear it. And you're going to be free to share it to other friends or anyone who may need to hear it. And we hope that, again, this blesses you. And if you have any questions of anything, do not be afraid to ask. Just leave a comment right here on the blog, on Facebook, Instagram, wherever you find this posted. Just leave a comment right there and we'll come in and have a question and answer segment where we answer your questions, or we might just respond to you directly. So if you want us just to respond to your email directly, just put that information in and we'll send that back to you. Our email is on the website. Everything is right there if you want to do it privately or if you want to do it publicly. It doesn't matter. And so I hope you enjoy, well, it's not a story as a fictional story, but the entire true life story of Emma Rose Penn.